I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Kim Bohr. She is the president and the CEO of Spark Effect. She leads the firm in helping executive teams navigate disruption without fracturing trust. And we just spent a lot of time in the green room. We probably should have been recording that. But trust is one of the topics that I just absolutely love. I think it's important. It's easy to say, "Oh, yeah, we all need trust, just like we all need love. We'll make it into a Beatles song." No, this is something you want to tune in and listen to, because I think it's going to be phenomenally cool. Kim, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And so my fascination with trust is, I'm a marketer that, our clients do high ticket stuff, high ticket complex stuff in crowded markets, and they have to build trust. When you're talking about trust, you're talking about in the workplace.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something that is handled flippantly. I've known organizations that I respect that actually have things like a no gossip policy. You'll get like one warning. They're like, if you have a complaint, you have two people you can take it to. You can either take it to that person or you can take it to their immediate boss. If you take it to anybody else, we're going to fire you. And because it destroys trust.
Yeah. Yeah. It also, though, may also not foster the right setting either for what, they're wanting. It may not be the right behaviors influencing the right, the outcomes they want. I think, trust is often been this squishy thing, and it's really now becoming something that should be looked at more seriously, more as, the same kind of KPI as you have with other things you measure. Like it has real tangible elements to it that I think have been overlooked for too long.
Yeah. Now, when you're working with trust, are you focused more at the executive level or deeper in the organization? What levels are you addressing? Yeah.
So in our organization, we address trust at multiple levels. I do a lot of work specifically with executive teams and CEOs. So I work with CEOs around their performance evaluations when they hire us as a third party to come in and do the work. I also work with executive teams that are misaligned. And, inevitably, when teams are talking about some type of misalignment, sometimes they point to communication. When you really unpack it, underlying that is really trust. It's not just communication. It's one of the factors that's impacting trust in a negative way.
Yeah. Well, I think, the one thing that's true, in my work, we try to shortcut the trust ethically and strategically,
right.
But it's a thing that takes a long time to build. And mm-hmm. I think back to my very first job out of college. My job before college was 6 years in the Marine Corps, which is a pretty regimented environment. And my first job out of college, I think it was my performance review at the first year, hit my first year anniversary out of college. And my boss is meeting with me and he's like, "Was there anything that we could do better here?" And I was like, "Oh no, it's great." Which of course was a lie. And he's like, "Well, come on, there's got to be something." I was like, "Oh, no, I'm really enjoying it." And he just kept pressing. I was like, "Well, we have these team meetings late on Friday afternoons that often run to like 5 or 6 o'clock Friday night. And it makes it a little bit hard for me to plan my weekend because there are things that I want to do on Friday night." You're like, "Oh, okay. Yeah. And it was probably, a year later, almost a year later, a very senior person that was highly respected and trusted by our mutual boss came up to me and he said, "Hey, I hear you don't like meeting on Friday nights." I'm like, "Yeah, where'd you hear that?" He's like, "Oh, I just had my performance review with Daryl." And I brought that up and Daryl said, "Huh, you and Craig Andrews." He said, "I promise it's more than just the two of us." And I couldn't believe it that a whole year had passed. Everybody had asked the same question. There was only one other person that trusted that was safe enough for him to share that.
I think that is such that's a great example, right? Of first of all, it was good for the leader for at keeping the ask and probing and trying to, have you really speak your truth. I think, I have an experience from when I was early in my career, as my late 20s. I was working for, a very large logistics company that we would all know very well. And I was in a sales and marketing type of function. And this leader I had, we were during, it was very, just no other way to say it. He was an absolute bully. And his leader had come into town and they were doing performance reviews. And then she had asked to talk to us as far as I think more just 360 type of interview feedback. But I had a sense that something wasn't, I just didn't feel right. And so when she was asking me some specific questions and some situations, I said, "Look, I don't trust that this isn't going to get back to him." And she said, "No, I guarantee you it won't. This is really important." I said, "Okay." So I told her, I answered the questions that were, just he was not a good leader. And nevertheless, a few days later, I get hauled into his office. He closes the door and he berates me for having shared what I did. So I immediately left that and I immediately contacted his boss and I said, "This is unacceptable. This is not what you promised." And she was horrified. And I said, "How, you set me up for exactly what I wasn't wanting to have happen, and you totally lost all my trust." And it wasn't too long after that that I left the organization. It also he also got reassigned to a different part of the company. And I think that really instilled in me a couple of things that, you can't take trust for granted. We can all make mistakes, but it is about, understanding how you're setting somebody up for something that feels so highly just exposed. But also that, that was something that I never wanted to have happen to other people. And so I can't say I haven't made mistakes, but I certainly that is an early memory. I can, as I sit here and tell you that story, I can remember exactly the settings of each of those conversations and the fact that it really did have me not want to invest further in a career there. And that was a big loss, from a retention standpoint on their part. And I know I wasn't the only one.
Well, and I imagine when you recall that story, you probably still feel a lot of the feelings that you felt from back then.
Absolutely. Because it was already, a very unique culture of an organization. And they really didn't hire outsiders too much. You really had to come up through the ranks. But in the roles that I had held, that was an area that they knew they did need that kind of talent from outside. So it always felt a little bit like an outsider experience, and felt like he thought he could bully me around, in various ways that I just wasn't going to, allow. But it does, like even as I talk to you about that, I could feel that tightness again back in my chest around, those experiences.
Yeah, and the tough thing with that is it's really hard. It's not impossible to recover from that on a trust standpoint, but it's hard. It's hard.
Well, I can, if you will indulge me, I can add on that story just a tiny bit. Somebody came in and replaced him, much better human being. However, when the day came, as I mentioned, I left not too long afterwards. We had to be walked out to the guard shack. It was this very, you had to stay within the lines, very, very formal. And as I'm literally carrying my box of stuff, I left on really good terms because we it happened to coincide with a move we were going to make. And so it just worked out where it was on good terms.
The way you're describing it, I'm picturing you leaving the Supermax in Colorado.
You may be accurate. I was in Colorado at the time. And so I'm carrying my box out And the leader at that time, the different leader said, "Can I give you some feedback?" Literally, we're walking and I'm carrying my box. I'm like, "Now? Sure." And she said, "You can be really intense sometimes." And I said, "Okay, do you have any examples?" Literally, imagine box in hand walking, and we get to the guard shack, and she's like, "No, but you should just reflect on that." And I was like, "Thanks." So, needless to say, that's probably a whole nother episode of things we can go down, but that's another trust example of we had plenty of time together before I left that position for her to give me feedback or to coach me and to tell me, well, what does that intensity look like? And it took me down my own path of development of like, well, what does that look like? And is it good or bad, right? Is there positive or negative inside that statement? But that was another statement that was just really quite, create obviously it created quite a memory for me, and it really informed a lot of the work I do today.
Yeah. It's, I mean, such a shame. I mean, the things that you're talking about, they, I'm sure they spent a lot of money bringing you in. And the, and even though you were, you brought some expertise that they needed, there's still some ramp up time getting, for you to get to know the company and how they do things. And it just seems like a whole lot of loss that could have been avoided.
Completely. I think it's unfortunate when you see organizations that just don't invest in leaders to have the skills they need to have those kind of conversations. Whether it's the first example and thinking about the emotional intelligence that that leader lacked, and that his rule, his way of leading was by bullying, or whether it was the second leader who just didn't know how to give feedback that would have been really constructive for me as a professional growing, in a way that instead it left me very, like I said, I had to do my own soul searching, but I think a lot of organizations aren't investing in that level of frontline leader in the way they need to. And that even came out in the work we've done around trust. And so I think it's a missed opportunity that I think organizations really need to take another look at.
Yeah, and and kind of the sad thing is, I believe we're a forgiving people, and I don't think that's just limited to the United States. It just I think we're a forgiving people. I mean, I had a job once where my general manager would promise things to the to Siemens, the Germans, that he knew we could never deliver. And my job was to go tell the Germans, "Oh, that thing we promised, we're not going to deliver it." And I got really good at delivering bad news to Germans. And but it always began with step one, some version of "we screwed up." If you always start, it's amazing how forgiving people are if the first thing out of your mouth is, "I made a mistake, and I want to let you know what that mistake was."
Completely. And that's, and I think what's a challenge is that we aren't seeing as much of that, as we should. And sometimes there's just these blind spots, and but when we have these opportunities for things to be brought to our attention, it is that moment of, okay, I didn't realize. I'm sorry, let me understand. It's all those, it's becoming inquisitive. And I think that's missing. And I don't know if I think it's missing in part because there's development at that level of leader isn't happening as frequently with the right types of skill building. I think it's because we're moving so fast in business that we're just, there's not enough time to stop and understand impact in many aspects of business. I think that's another reason.
Well, and kind of going back to Siemens, here's something I think that will help hammer home the point you're trying to make. I was sitting at my desk one day, and we had gone a few rounds. We went, sadly, way too many rounds of promising things we couldn't deliver. Me going to the Germans, "Hey, that thing we promised, yeah, we're not doing it."
And
The
that's a trust credibility issue too, if they feel you that keeps happening over and over again.
well, one day my phone rings, and I notice it's a German country code. I'm like, "Huh, wonder what that is." I pick it up, and it was somebody from Siemens. And his name was Reiner. I'm like, "Hey, Reiner, what's going And first words out of his mouth were, "She left me." And he starts telling me about his divorce that just
Oh my
starts
goodness.
unraveling. And I'm sitting there thinking, Of all the people in your life, you call the guy who keeps showing up and saying, "Hey, that thing we promised, we're not delivering."
Yeah. Well, it's amazing how the, we spend so much time of our work lives amongst work colleagues. And I think it's a great example of the relationship and the trust that gets built in that local dynamic. And it is stronger than what we've seen from our research around at the organizational level of trust. And so I think that's a beautiful example of someone who, for some reason, felt you were a safer ear, than maybe somebody closer to him that maybe they felt like would be more judgmental. And I think that's where, trust inside, these teams, you don't, it doesn't have to be leader by title that is the trust person. It very well is somebody who shows up like you were speaking of and is able to say, hey, we screwed up, and always trying to come, and own that, that creates a trust that can be relied on in really unique ways.
Yeah, I look at that, and that's to this day, it's one of my proudest moments. That guy, of all the people in Germany, he calls me in the United States,
Yeah.
who had been causing him so much pain because his life was falling apart. And
It's crazy. But it's a, like I said, it's a beautiful example of trust and relationship at such a, when we're working with people on these day-to-day basis, right? We have all these disruptions that are happening in our lives, and we have the opportunity, and we're doing it with these people that are around us more than we are around our family many times. And I think that's, I think we can miss those opportunities of how do we, build trust with these little disruptions. And I don't mean to negate how serious it is for what he dealt with, but that's a disruption amongst many things that was probably going on, and a really significant one that needed to be, he needed to be feel, feel seen and heard.
Another example that I think of, going back to the financial crisis of 08, I was living in Texas at the time, but the company that I worked for in North Carolina, the CEO, who I'd always respected, I'd always thought this, he was really smart. He brought a lot to the company. He wasn't real kind to me when I left, but that's okay. Actually, he did me a huge favor. He sent a really, really nasty letter to the CEO of the company I was coming to. And the CEO came to me and was like, "Yeah, Bob wrote this really nasty letter." And I said, "Why don't you send Bob a Christmas card to thank him for confirming who you hired?" But I always had a lot of respect for Bob. And when the financial crisis hit, he came out and announced that all pay raises were on hold and all 401k matching was on hold. Okay, that's not weird. That was happening with a lot of companies. What weird is he did that within 2 weeks of his 10K filing that said he got 5% pay raise. And I just remember thinking, Bob, you're smarter than that. You're smarter than that. Why didn't you argue? I get it, the compensation committee came up with that. Why didn't you strongly object and say, "No, I refuse this. You're making my job harder. Don't give me a 5% pay raise. Give me a 5% pay cut. Oh, by the way, fluff up my stock, fluff my stock
Other
options."
ways, right? I think that's another really great example too of just how the, it's like you have to, the blind spots that people have, or just these intentional, like, do they really think people weren't going to figure this out? And then you talk about that lack of transparency and open communication just totally is a huge destroyer of trust.
So how do we tackle this?
Yeah, I think, I think there's a few ways. One is, I don't think there's many people out there that would say trust is not, a top priority for me inside my organization. The reality, though, is that there are, on a daily basis, there are actions being taken that erode trust. And not even at a, not even talking about like at a big scale, right? These little micro moments that people mishandle. And so I think we need people to understand that trust is truly measurable, and you can do it. We've shown how you can do it. It really is something that if you understand what those, we call them interventions, or those things that you're doing that you are actually thinking, you're disconnecting around how, that are negatively impacting trust. Like, you can fix that. These are not, super complicated actions. Things like open and honest communication, trying to have people understand, like, hey, where does my role fit with this change, and how does it align to our strategy? Treating people fairly when you have to make tough decisions. One of the things that we experience in this world of outplacement, a piece of the business we do, is that organizations often are trying to do something for those people who are separating, but really because they want the people that are still remaining in the company to see that they're good people, that they are like, look, we did something good. And the reality is that they don't always, it's a little bit more of a lipstick on a pig kind of scenario. And I think that those are those trust breakers where people are watching, and you are going to impact your retention and your reputation. So understanding what are the destroyers and what are those builders, and what can we do to take action, and how can we do, like what you were describing, on a real personal basis. Like, how do I get to know my team, and why is somebody suddenly showing up late, and do I understand what's going on with them, or have I just kept like the corporate hat on? And that's, in this day and age, especially with the younger generation coming into the workforce, that isn't going to work at all.
Well, and I ran into that recently. I stepped into somebody was late for something and they'd been late a couple times. And one time I texted him like, "Hey, you still coming?" And I regret that. The next time I texted him, it was like, "Hey, are you okay?" And turns out he wasn't. There was something big going on in his family. Guess what? Since I sent the text, "Are you okay?" He's showing up on time.
That moment to just be understood, like, when you know what's going on, and you don't feel like you feel like you have that trusting relationship that you can say, hey, this is what is going on right now. And then it kind of gives you that permission. I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, we're going to go through this together versus you have to just figure it out on your own. And I think we need to be more, working together as a community, as colleagues, in all these different ways, because life is hard and business is hard. There's a lot going on that is forces that are coming at you that are kind of pushing against the business in ways that it already is tough to just thrive in business right now. And so trying to figure out how do we help, just be humans to one another is a really needed opportunity.
Yeah. Let's talk about when you screw up. Do you have recommended processes or procedures? I had my little formula for when we screwed over the Germans. All right, here it is. It's a four-step playbook. Here's what we're going to do. And it worked. Do you have a playbook for when folks screw up?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two approaches, right? One is if it's brought to my attention because I didn't realize it, then I think it is around getting curious and, admitting like I didn't realize that, or whatever that situation is, and then trying to understand where the disconnect is and owning it. Absolutely. I think if it's a, oh, I just realized I just stepped in it, I think the quicker, it's really important to just quickly come out and get ahead of it and say, you know what, I just showed up in a way that wasn't okay. And I did that the other day. In fact, I entered into a call. I had no reason to carry this energy with me. I had been working on some other things that I just, for whatever reason, I just came into this call. I ended up cutting somebody off in the conversation. I made assumptions about what we were talking about. I mean, it was ridiculous. And all of a sudden I was like, I am so sorry. I don't, I, this is not, this isn't okay. I'm so sorry. I can't even tell you why I've come in with this energy, and I just want you to know I really feel really bad. And so it reset everything for the two people that were on the call. And before I got off, I said, I'm really sorry. And then I took a moment afterwards to be like, what is going on? And I had my own moment of reflection. So I think, it's about when you realize it yourself, immediately get into the, own it, and clean up your mess, and try to recognize like what's going on. And if it's brought to your attention, get really curious and understand, like, is this a misunderstanding, or, what did I do? And then own that too, and own the commitment to repair that relationship.
I know one thing I believe. I'm curious on your thoughts on this. I believe that when the offense is public, the apology needs to be public.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. I think it's really important to stand and say, look, I didn't show up as my best, or we made a major mistake. We need to own that on a larger scale. We made bad calls. I think absolutely 100% agree.
Yeah. Going back to 08, I can think of a way another company handled something that I really admire. Do you know who AMD is?
Yeah.
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 So, of course, they got hit. Everybody got hit. And so they had to do pay cuts. The executive team took a 20% pay cut. The management team took a 15% pay cut. And the individual contributors took a 10% pay cut. And when things got better and they restored it, they restored the individual contributors first, then the management team, and finally the executive team. And I just really, really admired that. I was like,
Yeah.
nor and it's rare that I admire big companies. I was like, how did they figure that out? Because I just thought that was an amazing way to handle a tough situation.
Yeah, what a great model. And it sounds like, they kept people, as many people as they could employed. They may have had to make some tough decisions, but they were trying to minimize how much they had to do. And I think that speaks volumes around at least the framing of that, right? Of the where it landed with the values, the transparency, the communication, letting people know where the situation is and trying to make sure they understood, what they were going to do to try to preserve. I think those are really the key, some of the key builders. But there's a lot of these little moments of how we show up and what we say or what we don't do that have really huge breaks in trust in ways that are hard to climb out of if we're consistently unaware of the actions we're taking and how they're landing.
Yeah. Well, and kind of going back to one of the things that hit me when you were talking about if you make a mistake, own it quickly, correct it quickly. If you're building a team of really, really good people, and I hope everybody is, well, the recruiters know you have really, really good people. And you never know how long when they're calling in the midst of,
Oh, completely.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a great point. We think about, I mean, people have choice, and even in tough economies, people are, your top people are going to be likely getting calls. And so that idea of, we were able to show direct connection to retention, reputation, and revenue metrics, right? So our whole argument around this research we did and why I'm so passionate about this trust topic is that it should be thought about as a strategic metric like other KPIs, because it is. It absolutely is. Like, people will leave when they see other people aren't being treated fairly, or when they feel like they're not being treated fairly. When they feel like what the organization says is supposed to happen, but sure doesn't show up in the actions they take. That's a big, you can't pay people enough for long enough. Like, eventually they're going to just leave because they want more, especially the younger generation entering the marketplace. They have a very different set of criteria that they look at than some of the older generations.
Well, and it's the reason I'm living in Texas. There was the company that moved me to Texas had been recruiting me for 2 years. And I just kept telling them no, 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 no. And there was a breach of trust. There was a breach of trust, not on my part, but I had an engineer walk in my office and talked about how somebody stole a patent, not his patent. It was a patent of a buddy of mine. There was a designer that was a buddy of mine, and his boss stole his patent. I went to the boss and I said, "Hey, I had somebody complain about this. What can you tell me what's going on?" He dismissed me. I went to his boss. He dismissed me. I went to the VP. He dismissed me. Then guess who called? That company.
And they're in you're very much open to a conversation by then, right? Like, it makes sense. And had they've had the first person the first time said, hey, let me hear you and let's understand what's going on, and then found taken action against, what was clearly a violation of the ethics, like that would have made a difference. And yet it didn't. Your story reminded me of when I was before the logistics company, I was in telecom, big telecom. The company, through all the consolidation, it doesn't exist anymore. But it was a highly reputable company back then. It was MCI. And as the story, some of your listeners may know, the reality of it got purchased by WorldCom, and it felt very, it just didn't seem like that was possible, that WorldCom is a much smaller organization. And so I ended up under a leader who had come from the WorldCom side, who, let's just say, I had to work very, very hard to keep my book of business very clean. And I just got to a point where after I reported it, nothing was happening. And I said, I'm out. Like, I have no, this is just not, I'm not aligned with this type of leadership and working, and people who feel like that, that level of ethics just doesn't matter. So that remind, when you said that, that really reminded me. And what I did is I had somebody who said, hey, when you're ready, we want to have you over here. Now, that ended up not being a great experience, but it was the exact same thing you talked about. Like, that trust was broken. And I had built trust with the person who was recruiting me, and I was able to make the phone call and said, I'm out. And they were like, come on over. And so that's, I think we, as business owners and leaders in organizations, we need to realize that is, that's happening all the time if we're not really trying to be trusting to our and understanding what's going on with people and taking action and not letting a bunch of stuff people get away with stuff that they shouldn't be.
Well, Kim, this has been absolutely amazing. I love what you're doing. I believe everybody needs it. And it's not because people are bad people. We all have blind spots.
Totally. I
And
completely
so
agree.
I hope people will reach out to you, and because I think what you're doing is valuable. How can folks reach you?
Yeah, we are going to have a page for your listeners. So if they go to sparkeffect.com/legacies, they will be able to download the trust report I mentioned. There's also a couple of guides that they can get that actually takes the data and allows them as leaders to say, well, what do I do with this? What can I do with this with my team to build trust? And so it's something that I think will be really helpful. We're really, wanting to see more leaders think about trust in the way we're talking about. And then, of course, I'm on LinkedIn as well and love to have people reach out to me and Kim Bohr there, Bohr. And then the last place is, I also have a podcast, Courage to Advance. And if people want to listen to, leadership stories and where we really see this trust and disruption intersecting, I'd love for them to come and check that out as well.
I think they should. Kim, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making an impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.